happy Hanukkah to all. So I will learn tonight, Le'ilu Nishmas, my namesake, Mordechai ben Yaakov Alevi, my grandmother's brother, who is Nifter on the third night of Hanukkah. So his Neshama Shev and Aliyah.
Amen.
And a Refuah Shlemah for Rabbi Kalember. Thank you. Okay, so I don't think we've actually looked at this in a really long time, Yehuda and Tamar. I don't know why. Probably because Mechiras Yosef just has so much to say. But I wanted to share with you an article by Rabbi Evan Hoffman from New Rochelle, which I thought was really, really an excellent look at Yehuda and Tamar. And he really skips to the heart of it, which is what Tamar does and what Yehuda, you know, meets out as her judgment. So I want to kind of take a look at those psukim tonight and try to understand what exactly is going on. So Vayomer Yehuda l'Tamar kalato. So Yehuda says to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, this is after Er and Onan have both died. And the truth is that Yehuda can't imagine that the problem is with his boys. He assumes that she killed two of his sons. Like, you're not getting my third son. So he says to her, listen, go back to Shvi Almana Beit Avich, Ayigdal Sheila Bini. I want you to go home and just stay where you are. And don't call us, we'll call you. Because his fear was that Sheila would die the same way his brother said. Vatelech Tamar, Vatesha Beit Aviha. And Tamar went and she sat in her father's house and she waited. So it's a little bit weird what's going on here, because why does she have to wait? Like, this is like
But they didn't do Yibum. Oh, but they kept all the mitzvahs. What do you mean?
Yeah, but like, I don't know. I mean, you'll see that Rabbi Hoffman does not feel that they kept all the mitzvahs. Just a preview. But
how old is Sheila?
So, I don't know. Let's say Shayla is 7, 8, 9 years old.
So, she would have had to wait anyway.
But, so, that's a question. Like, did Yibum really exist? And this is like...
Oh, that.
Right. Meaning, like, was... And was that really the practice back then? Like, was that the expectation?
Well, clearly. Because the first brother died. The first son died. And she married the next brother. And then this one died. And clearly the expectation was she's going to marry the third one.
Right. But that, I guess my question is, like, where does that have to come from? Does that have to come from, like, where Yehuda says, like, hey, like, Onan, like, this is on you. Your brother died. And it's your job, lahakim shem achiv, to, like, you know, to make your brother's name stay alive. But what if, like, they check out? They're like, no, we're not interested. Which is clearly the case.
But that's what chalitz is. I'm not interested.
But then why doesn't Yehuda do chalitza?
Well,
right? Meaning, like, if that's the case, like, that there's this concept really of Yibum that really, really existed, that they actually did, then why is it that, like, wait a second, like, they're not doing it? And clearly, Yehuda... Say again?
Whose choice is it, the boys or the girls, or either one?
In, like, the Yibum...
If chalitza existed...
So, like, and from, you're talking, like, in the halachic realm. So, like, you have two brothers. Reuven dies, has no kids. His wife is, I don't know, Dina. And Shimon is his brother. So, it's Shimon's choice. Shimon has to decide, like, I could, you know, do Yibum, which basically, it's not even marriage. It's, he says, I'll do it. And then when he's kone her, I believe, through Bia. And then if he says, alternatively, right? If he says, I'm not interested, so then you do chalitza and that's it. That's
okay,
the end
so
of it.
So first of all, you're implying that this was Yehuda's way of getting rid of her.
I don't think I'm...
He didn't say, my kid's too young, go wait in your father's house. What's the instruction for her to wait? Is indicative that she's waiting for something.
Yeah, but the story will tell us that that's really not.
Well,
what...
Maybe he changed his mind.
I mean, I think.
And is it the father's choice? Is it Shayla's choice?
Maybe he's waiting for Shayla.
Yeah, he's waiting for Shayla to grow up and make a choice.
I don't know. I find that
let's pretend it is a mitzvah and they didn't keep all the mitzvahs. He's gonna take it away from Shayla. It's a rare mitzvah. You don't. Most people don't get the opportunity to do that mitzvah. Thank God.
And right, it's not like Shiluach HaKan where we like right, that we arrange right. it. We're like, if I kill your brother. Yeah, no, but the problem is because it says like in Yodalid, Ki Rataki Gadal Shela. Like, Shela grew up.
Yeah.
And like.
Why don't we work our way up to that?
Right, but I'm. Right, I mean, I guess. Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Fair point. But I think that, like, to me, I've always felt like Yehuda, and maybe it's just the evolution of Yehuda's character. I kind of like feel a little guilty because I did, I bought a book. Well, I bought a lot of books, but, and I feel guilty about that too. But I bought a book this summer or before the summer by Nechama Price on the Shvatim. And like I started reading it, and this was probably a little bit of arrogance where I was like, I know this already. I don't need to read it. And then like I put it on the shelf, and then a neighbor borrowed it. Probably forget that we ever lent it to them eventually. But like I would be curious to see, because I think that Yehuda's character, like the Lamed Zayin Lamed Chet connection, the fact that the two prakim are together, you know, like Lamed Zayin Lamed Chet Lamed Tet, those three prakim are like very disjointed. Like Lamed Zayin should come straight into Lamed Tet, like throws him in the pit, he comes out of the pit, he goes to Egypt, right? Like that's it. And like this perek completely doesn't fit in here. In fact, I once asked Rabbi Et Shalom, like, is it possible that this happened, like, when the brother, like, if you accept Rabbi Et Shalom's premise that Yehuda and the brother, like, that the brothers were born over, like, much more than a 13-year period, but a 7-year period, actually. If you accept that maybe right 7 years into Yaakov's stay in Haran, he started having kids, and he's there for 40, 50 years, I said, is it possible that this story actually occurred while Yaakov was in Haran? Which, according to his, like, you know, take, was not so crazy. And he was like, yeah, it's definitely possible. His theory anyway is just a theory. Like, there's no way to prove that he's right. There's no way to prove that this is like that this is wrong either. It doesn't explain the placement. So I think where the placement connects is there's, you know, Rashi points out very clearly that at the beginning of Lamed Chet, it's Yehuda, Vayered Yehuda Me'itachav. Yehuda went down. What does it mean? It meant his status went down. Why? Because all the brothers look at him and say, you know, this is your idea, right? Like, they kind of forget that, like, actually, if it wasn't for his idea, Yosef would be dead, right? But they blame it. They blame him. So he's like, forget you, I'm leaving, right? And then at the end, the connection of Lamed Chet, Lamed Tet, Rashi says, it's a little bit harder, is that they're the same way Tamar had like this L'shem Shamayim element to her, like stuff that she's doing with Yehuda. So too, Eshes Potiphar had the same thing because she saw that Yosef was going to have a kid with someone from her household. So she assumed it was her, when in fact it's her, whatever, her daughter or her stepdaughter, whatever it is. So, but anyway, I think it's interesting to just wonder if this is part of Yehuda's development. Like, he doesn't own it. He didn't own what he did to Yosef, throwing him in the pit. Like, he's whatever. And now, I don't think he owns this one either. He's like, all right, it's Tamar's fault. I don't want to tell her that it's her fault. So instead of telling her, what is it? It's like, just send her away. Look, the truth is we've all done this, right? Like, there's that person that gets on us that we really should just tell them that. And rather than doing that, we like just push them away far enough. Like, maybe they'll leave me alone kind of thing. I think that's really what's happening. But okay, wait, David did say we should go on and see as the psukim go and see what happens. Vayirbu ayamim, pasuk yud bet. Vatamat batshua eshet Yehuda. Yehuda's wife dies. Vayinachem Yehuda. Yehuda consoles himself. Vayal al gozei tzon ahu v'chira reu adulami timnata. He and his good friend Chira, they go to shear the sheep in Timna. Vayugado tamar leimor. Hinei chamich olet timnata lagoz tzono. Tamar finds out that her father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear the sheep. Batasar bigdei almanu tami aleha. She takes off the clothing of mourning. She's worn them for a long time. And what does she do? Vatachas batzaif atitalaf. She covers her face with a scarf. Vateshev petach einayim. And she sits at the cross, at the fork in the road, Asher al derech Timnata, which is by the road to Timna. Ki rata ki gadal sheila v'hilo nidna lo lisha, because she looks and says, Sheila got older, and I didn't get him as a wife, as a husband, right? I didn't become his wife. So that's what the psukim tell us. Again, that would kind of lead you in the direction of saying, Yehuda never really planned on giving her over. It was just like a way of hoping that she would go and just leave.
It's also not consistent with Nebo, because it's Vehi lo nitna lo, Vehi being, I guess, Yehuda, did not give to him, Shayla, Li'isha, for a wife.
No, Vehi, and she was not given to him as wife.
Right, yeah. But who's giving? It means she's being given by somebody else.
Well, I think that's
being taken by Shayla.
All right, maybe.
But here's what Yibum is.
Here's my question. If she's going to trick anybody into doing the Yibum...
Yeah, go after Shayla, right? Yeah, like this is the perfect time. Go knock on Shayla's door and be like, hey, right? Like that might be a better one. That's a good point. You know, sometimes like that's like such a like obvious one. I don't know.
I'm saying like,
that's great. Who, what?
Yeah. Oh. No, Shabbos or during the week?
No, during the week.
Oh, no, I wasn't doing it.
So I don't know where this, one person, obviously I got the Rambam down there, but he gave a really insightful answer that he got from somebody who, I don't know the names of his sources. But I don't want to say it, unless that's what you go.
No, you could share.
But he said that Tamar, similar to Rus, although Rus was much later, had, I don't know if it was prophetic, that the Machos Bnei Shul was going to come to Yehuda, obviously Yehuda being himself, and that was later from Ruth. She wanted to be the mother. She wanted to be desperately involved in that. And Yehuda's kids, the two that died and were living, they were from Kanani women. They were They were not going to be Malchus, fathers of Malchus Yehuda.
So even Shayla then wouldn't be.
So she started with those other two. They died for whatever reason, but she actually wanted Yehuda, so that she could be the mother and be involved in that.
Uh huh. Okay. Then, yeah.
But she had to wait for Ashes Yehuda to die first, throw out of a shot. Because, we don't marry two women.
But Ashes Yehuda, right? Well, I couldn't marry two.
I know what I'm saying. So she could. Yeah, so she couldn't make the flight. She'd have to wait.
So going back to Henry's question, though, as much as Yibam would have said that Shayla should have been the next husband. The fact that Yehuda didn't give him is significant. So if she's not going to get Shayla, then she went a different route to continue the seed.
Right, which is not really Yibum. It's the whole story. We would say is Yibum ish, right? I mean, I'm sure eventually, right?
Oh,
you're saying maybe? Well, right. I guess it's possible that he married someone.
Then wouldn't the trigger be not the cutting of the shearing of the sheep? It would have been if you saw that Shayla got married, or she heard that Shayla got married.
The shearing of the sheep was the opportunity.
Well, the shearing the sheep part would probably the most logical reason why that's a good time is A, he's like on the road, so like that's a chance to catch him. And he's also like, it's a good time. Shearing the sheep is like, it's the end of the year. You just got your big bonus. Like, knock out, like, a nice bottle of something.
So it's really goes on the threshing floor there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely connections between the two stories. And, of course, the most obvious connection is Tamar has Peretz, and Peretz eventually has Boaz, and Boaz has David. So, we're going, Davidic from Yehuda at the beginning to like David on the other end, all the way, you know, to Melech HaMashiach. Okay. Pasuk Tet Vav. Fayirel Yehuda vayachshev el zona ki chista paneha. Yehuda sees her and assumes that she is a prostitute because she's covered her face. Two possible ways of reading this pasuk. One is the reason why she covered her face was because she was a prostitute, and back then, the prostitutes were very likely to be regular people from within the community, but this was their only way to provide a means for themselves. So it's a little bit embarrassing to be sitting on the road and people are like, oh, that's so-and-so's daughter, spouse, whatever. So they covered their face. But Rashi says, no, she didn't cover her face here. It's she was so tsanua in the house of Yehuda that her face was always covered there. So now all of a sudden he looks at her, he goes, I don't know who she is. So either way, the problem with the pasuk is...
Oh, you mean kichista paneha when she was living with Yehuda?
Yeah. That's a Rashi read.
So why did he think she's a Zona? Because he didn't recognize her?
No. One way is... Right, one way is that prostitutes covered their faces, which is probably, you know, a possibility. But then again, like, I don't know, maybe prostitutes didn't cover their faces because then you'd be like, if she's... Right, if her face is covered, maybe she's, you know, ugly and I'll find a different prostitute, right? So I guess Rashi has both of these as possibilities. But I always find it like that's the hard part of it. He's Yehuda, v'yachshev el zona. And then what happens? He goes over to her. Right, and he says to her, I'd like to sleep with you. Now this is like, such a hard read when you're talking about like Yehuda, one of the Shvatim, which is why it's so obvious that the Medrash is going to have to clean this up. So, right? Because what? How do you sell this one? Now, the easiest way to sell this one is you don't teach it. Right? Like, that's the absolute easiest one. Although, I always found this to be, like, I didn't find that this was the hardest thing to teach because you're like, they, like, you clean it up a little bit. Yehuda sees her. He says, I want to marry you. It's not exactly what happened. It's close enough. But anyway, yeah. It's.
I'm not sure that it's such a... I don't have such a big deal with the whole story. He's not married. She's not married.
Yeah, but the whole concept is...
I think we're using our modern day ideals of what prostitutes are and saying, oh, no, that's no good.
No,
but back then it was strictly a... It was a transaction.
Right, no, but no, that, but that, that's...
He was going to give her a little sheep.
No, but that's precisely the point, meaning like from a religious standpoint, like a single guy, we don't believe should be sleeping with people just for the sake of sleeping with them. Meaning if you're too poor to afford the ring, then you say, listen, honey, hare at mekudeshesli bibiazu. It's be a little bit uncomfortable under the chuppah, right? But that's what we're saying. Like you could, but like other, it is transactional, but like that's like not such a.
So was marriage.
He didn't want to marry her.
I know, but then why? But then you don't like the whole concept is that.
What's the halacha against it?
What is the halacha against it?
A non-married woman.
If you sleep with a non-married woman, you're paying all kinds of fines and stuff like that. You should probably. Yes, you're right. Like from a strictly halachic standpoint, if the woman, right, this was like, you know, the whole big thing on the Upper West Side like years ago, right, like tefillin dates, right? She went to the mikvah.
A couple years ago?
Maybe still, I don't know. I'm like old already. Right? She went to the mikvah. She didn't tell him that she was single. He brought his tefillin. It's beautiful. Not really. Like that's the whole concept of znus.
It's an idea, but it's not anti-halacha. It's not. There's nothing inherently wrong with it other than we've been conditioned to believe this is bad.
There are fines involved, but that doesn't make it usser.
So I would say that Where I would categorize that is a novel Birshus HaTorah.
Okay.
But that's like a pretty bad thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not like one of those things like, I beat the system on that one, right? The same way, novel Birshus HaTorah is a person that eats and eats and eats and eats until they throw up, right? So, but I made a bracha and I benched. V'chalta, wow, v'savata, you know? But like the Torah says, like the reason why you eat is to sustain yourself, right? It's a little bit more complicated when you're talking about, you know, like this, but it's not just about procreation and it's not just about enjoyment, but there is like vayula basar echad, but you're not, because you're giving once you give the sheep, it's exactly what you said, it's transactional. He's now paid for the night.
So why is Tamar eventually charged with being killed?
Yeah, that's going to be that's really our only question tonight.
Okay, let's get there.
All right, we just have a couple more psukim to go. Fine. So he goes off the path. Yeah, he definitely goes off the path on that one, right? So, but the Medrash does clean it up and say that like he's like walking there, like he has to get that way, and he's walking that way and finds himself there by her. And he's like, no, I'm right. Groundhog's Day, does it again. And then he also ends up there. And it happens like several times until finally he's like, this must be divinely inspired. But I think where the Medrash is coming from is, it's a really uncomfortable story. Like, yes, I get the scope of tshuva by Yehuda. You know, you could nearly kill your brother, lie to your father, and sleep with a prostitute, and you could still be Malchus, right? I mean, that's like the scope of tshuva, but it's still a tough read. So by Yomer, havana voilayich ki lo yadaki chalatovi. He says, I want to sleep with you, and he said that because he didn't know that it was his daughter-in-law. Vatomer mati tenli ki tavoilai. So she says, right, like it's like the elephant in the room. I'm a prostitute. What are you going to pay me? Right, like this is not free. I'll send you sheep from the or goats from the tzon. She's like, I'm not stupid. Right? You're not going to send it to me. What's the eravon? Right, I want. I need a guarantee, a collateral, right? So Vayomer Ma'ir Ravona Shar Tenlach, Vatomer Chotamcha Ptilecha Umatcha Shar Biyadecha. He says, what is the A Ravon I'm going to give you? So she, right? He says, right? Basically he's saying, like, name your price. And she says, well, I want your signet ring and your staff, right? Good things like that. Vayiten La, Vayavo Eila Vatar Lo. And he does that. And he sleeps with her, and she becomes pregnant. She gets up, and by the time he wakes up in the morning, she's gone, and she's already home wearing her clothing of mourning. Everybody, you know, I always felt every like when you read these psukim, one of the messages is everybody needs a friend like this guy, right? It's basically someone you could say, listen, I totally messed up. I need you to help me out. No questions asked. Right? So he says, come on, go find the girl and give her the goats. And they couldn't find it. So what happens? So he asks all the people, I mean, like, this is a good friend, right? He says to all the people, like, where is the prostitute that was by the road? They're like, there actually was never a prostitute there. Right? I guess everybody had their corner that they were comfortable working at. And they're like, there was never anybody at that corner. That was an empty corner. So he says, listen, I tried. I really did. Like, I did my hishtadlus. I went everywhere. I asked all the questions, and they said there's never been a prostitute there. Vayomer Yehuda. Yehuda says, Tikachla. She wins. She could have my chotemet, my ptilim, and my mateh. Peniela vuz. I'm going to be embarrassed. Hinei shalach, right? Because eventually it'll be like, oh, Who's asking? Who's he asking for? Oh, Yehuda. So we tried our best, and sometimes you try your best and it's just not good enough. Done. Three months pass, and Yehuda finds out that Tamar, his daughter-in-law, has strayed, and she's pregnant. There's nunim as a product of the adultery that she's committed.
What adultery?
Right. Okay. So Yehuda's going to say she's what? She's zakuk liyipum, right? She's bound. So there is, right? I believe if a woman is like, right, if she, let's say she doesn't do yibum and she doesn't do chalitza, and then she commits adultery, the kids are mamzei, and she gets pregnant, the kids are mamzeirim. So he says, right, this is like adultery. Vayomer Yehuda hotziuha v'tisaref. Yehuda says, take her out and have her burnt.
Where's her father in all of this?
Yeah, it's a great question.
Because I would say to Yehuda, come and try it. She's my daughter. You're not going to take my daughter out of the house.
Okay, yeah. All right, so where's her father? I have no idea. So let's start with Rashi.
But going back to the father, though. You know, like when Ruth and Arpa. Once they left they were married. They left their parents' house. They left. It wasn't like.
But she goes back to her father's house.
Right.
Yeah.
He sends her back to her father's house.
Which is where Arpa goes back also.
Yeah, so she's with the husband.
Okay, so let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says v'tisaref. Amar Ephraim Maksha Mishum Rabbi Meir. Bito shel shame haita. She was the daughter of shame. If you want to know where her father is, according to Rashi, her father is dead. Because shame died, certainly by the time Yaakov was in yeshivat, shame ve'ever, shame was just on the signage, but he was no longer alive. So this is already, you know, a while later. Bito shel shame haitashu kohen. She's a kohen, a bas kohen. Lefichach danua b'sreifa. Because we know in Parshas Emor that we're told that what happens if a woman, a daughter of a kohen, is mizane, punishment is sreifa.
Is this one of the Ervos? Or this is not one of the, sleeping with your daughter-in-law is not one of the Ervos?
It is.
How
does
that play here?
No, it's a good question.
So what's the modern day halacha? If the daughter of a Kohen marries a Yisrael and is then widowed, she goes back to being a Kohen?
Yeah,
she can be Truma.
Yeah.
She can, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so, right. So let, yeah.
Well, just on the Bito Shel Hashem, I'm trying to do the math. If she was Bito Shem, he was dead before Yaakov got to there. How old would she have been?
Yeah, just to give you like a sense. I have to tell you that why I love doing this is because you can take a Rashi like this, and if you're cynical enough or not, and ask all the questions, you're all of a sudden you find all these things that don't make any sense. It's 12 generations later.
But wasn't she so beautiful? That's why the two boys didn't want to sleep.
Yeah, right.
She's 187,000 years old. She's
right. So that's like a really big question that you're like, 12, like to be the daughter directly of shame is a really hard one. Now you want to say she's, you want to say descendant of shame, fine. But there's another big question. I mean, this, Rabbi Hoffman has five questions on this Rashi. Shmuel asked the first one, but
Michael?
Yeah.
In Yibum, so she should have been married to Shelo, but the fact that she had relations with Yehuda doesn't mean that it's suddenly kosher. I mean, meaning that would that relationship that be also
at that point she would have been disqualified from marrying Shelo, you think?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
So it's possible she's not that old.
Why?
Okay, so Shem died when Yaakov was about 100 years old. Or a little right around there. It looks like that's where the overlap is on these two charts. So if he had her right before he died, she could still only be 40 years old. Okay. It's not like so, or even less. It's not even so crazy. Because Yaakov, how old is Yaakov when he had all these? Like, how old is Yaakov?
Right, that's, you're assuming that in the, that they were having children at, he dies at what,
600 years old. Shem died at 600 years old.
But has kids, I think he has kids at 100.
Well, his daughter's not listed.
I know. He has Arpachshad and Banim Ubanot.
Right, so the Banim Ubanot could have been all the way out there.
Right, so that's one problem.
No, but is this how many years they lived after they had the Banim Ubanot?
No, only one that's listed.
By shame it tells us that.
After all the Banim and Banot are done, he lived another...
Oh, no. It tells us he is 100... I believe he's 100...
When this kid is born.
When Arpachshad is born. Right. Arpachshad is the only one that matters because he's going to have the next one that's going to lead us to Avram, and that's all that we care about.
And then you get the number of years after Arpachshad.
And, right, then it tells us that he lived to be however old he was. So that's one question. Any other questions on this Rashi?
Were they actually considered Kohanim at that point, the Bechor?
You're stepping into a big one there of who the oldest son of Noach was.
Oh.
It's funny, there are people that love that shir. I've never given it because it's like just a lot of technical reading of psukim. There's nothing like exciting about it other than you could play out any of the three of them to probably be the oldest.
But
I don't know if Shem is the oldest. I think it's probably... I think if you read the psukim, he's likely not.
But it's definitely giving the kahuna to the eldest, not to the lady.
Where do we see that he got the kahuna? So this is the problem. There is who's the only kohen that we know?
Malki Tzedek
kohen El Elyon. Right, where do we see him? We see him, right? By Lech Lecha, where? By the war of the four of the five kings. Melech Sdom comes and says to Avram, thank you so much, you saved the day. And what does Avram say to him? Avram ignores him and goes to Malki Tzedek, Kohen Elyon. Right? And Rashi says there, who's Malki Tzedek? Because we've never met Malki Tzedek before. Rashi says Malki Tzedek is who?
Shame.
Why? Right? Like, why does that have to be? So that's another question, right? Why? Shem is never mentioned as a Kohen. It's only Malki Tzedek. How do we know that? And then, like, let's just say this. Should be a pretty big question here. This is all pre-Matan Torah. Pre-Matan Torah, they were Dan a Kohen, or a Bas Kohen, Shezinta, Besreifa. I don't know.
Well,
okay.
Yaakov married two sisters. This was an issue. I mean, it's discussed in the Mepharshim that it was not an issue because Rachel died before they entered Eretz Yisrael.
Right, but the Psukim never tell us that it was a problem that he married two sisters. Right, like that's we darshan all that. So Rabbi Hoffman's problem with Rashi is that like we take this Rashi as like yeah, she's the daughter of shame, therefore Tanua Besreifa. But his point is there's so many questions on that. First of all, where do we even see that she's related to shame? How do we get that? Right. You pie out of the sky. You took Tamar and you said she needs a father. And there are at this point in time a lot of people in like Bereshis that you could like hook her onto. Why do you have to say? And if you, by the way, if you want to get her as a Kohen's daughter, what would be a much easier one? Say Bito Shel Malki Tzedek. Right? Wouldn't Rashi would be in such an easier place. At least some of our questions would be gone. And the last thing...
Bito Malki Tzedek would never be his
owner. And the last thing is, she's not even married. So how can you accuse her of being adulterous?
I was going to say the other way. If you rape the daughter of Yaakov, you die. If you cheat on the family of Yehuda, you also die.
Okay. It sounds like mafia like. It's a picture of it's a picture perhaps that we're not normally used to painting. Okay. All right, so that's Rashi. So I think that we've safely come to the conclusion that Rashi is not simple. So what we often do is we realize that there are other mefarshim besides Rashi that we don't see so often. So let's take a look at the Ramban. The Ramban gives us two answers. The Nirali says, Haya Yehuda katzin shoter moshel ba'aretz. Yehuda was like a big leader. He was like a local chieftain that people really were, you know, impressed by. V'akalasher tizne alav en eninu donek mishpat char nashim. And right, so if that's the case, so you can't be judged by the regular laws. Ach kimivazet amalchus. It's almost like morid b'malchus. Valkein katu vayomer Yehudah utziv tisarev ki baul lefanav laso b'kechol sher yitzaveh v'hu chiyevo tamita l'malad amalchut. The reason he judges her for death is because she went against, she embarrassed his kingdom. V'shafato ta kimchalel et aviha lekavod kunato lo sheyeh din hedyoto kein. This is not the regular law at the time, but because of his stature, he imposed that on her. And then, Valderech HaPshat, the Ramban says, but if you want, I'll give you Pshat, is Yitachen Shaya Mishpatam Kenahuga Yom Miktzat Arzo Svarad. Of course, this is in some of the Spanish lands, this was a law. Shaisha Asher Tiznet Tachet Isha Mosinu Talabala. If a woman commits adultery, I mean, this is like Arab culture, right? Woman commits adultery underneath her husband. Mosinu Talabala, they give her to the husband. V'udano talamito l'chayim kirtzono. And he chooses her fate. V'inayitam yu'adah l'shei labino, v'hi'ayitah lahem ke'eshet ish b'ni musayim. It was like she was married. And therefore, he does that. Okay. That's the Ramban.
It's like they treated her like this because she's Shayla's something, but yet no one's letting her marry him.
Right, and that's I think the problem is, meaning if Yehuda, like put your money where your mouth is, if you really wanted her as a wife or as a spouse to your kid, then like you should have done that. But if you don't want it, then what are you like making such a big stink here? So let's take a look at Rabbeinu Bachaye. Hotziu v'tisareif, kiblu mimenu miyad. He points out that they listened right away. What does that tell us? Mikana talameid. From here, you see Shuayah Dayan. You can see that he was powerful. Meaning, when he utters those words, "Hotziu v'tisareif," it's not nobody protests because he's Yehuda.
And her father's dead.
And Yehuda is like a really big, powerful guy. Okay. Those are some answers. I'm not sure that those are the best answers. Mevaza the Malchus. And even so, like, it just seems like from an ethical standpoint, it certainly should make you feel a little bit uncomfortable. So the Tosus HaShalem gives a different answer. He says that was not the law, and this has nothing to do with pre-Matan Torah, post-Matan Torah. The Avos kept the mitzvos, the Avos didn't keep the mitzvos. He says that in the times that Tamar was living in, there was a certain laxity and looseness to the way people acted, and therefore they created a strict law and said anybody that committed a hint of prostitution would be burnt. Meaning that they realized that the moral standards were falling by the wayside, and they create a lefnim meshuras hadin. They said, like, we are going to say, if anybody even tiptoes over the line, we'll kill them right away. And that's why, if you do that, right? Everybody will listen, and nobody will commit adultery, and people will be more careful.
So that's why Yehuda went and found a prostitute.
Yeah.
Not only that, and his best friend walked around the town looking for this prostitute.
Yeah.
Potentially a prostitute.
All right. So we don't have any good answers yet. Rashi has his problems. Ramban has his problems. The Tosfos HaShalim has problems. All right. So let me offer a fourth possibility. Rabbi Hoffman offers another possibility where he says, let's try to understand not why Yehuda was doing this, but what's the message of this story? So he says that if you really think about it, what's the end of the story? Well, let's fast forward. How does it end? Anybody?
Yehuda says, she outs Yehuda, and he says, yeah, she's right.
Tzadikim v'mani. And then what happens? If you have to finish off the story in like words
of,
yeah, it's great. It's a beautiful it's a beautiful fairy tale ending.
It's almost like Sota.
Is it?
Well, she has the baby.
What happens to Mark after she gives birth to the
twins?
She didn't have twins. What?
Yeah.
You hear from her?
So that's a machlokas in how you read the psukim. V'lo yasaf od ledata. Right? You could read it one of two ways. He never had relations with her. So then she becomes essentially a living widow, but at least she's got two kids now. Or Velo Yosef Odladata, he did not stop to have relations with her, not literally, but meaning he continues and she's his wife forever. So which one is it? So yeah, it's true. In why, I mean, they're both fairy tale endings. One of them, she gets locked away in the tower forever. Prince Charming never shows up. And the other one is they live happily ever after, together. But Rabbi Hoffman says, the truth is what we have to realize is that this is an unfair trial. It's not a question at all. So why is it here? Because what the Torah is trying to tell us is that that's what society is in the absence of structured law. Now, we're going to call that structured law what? Torah. But what Torah does is Torah gives a sense of this is what you do here, this is what you do there. So that there's absolute values that force us to judge a situation like that. Yehuda is living in a time where there isn't that. And that creates a certain sense of lawlessness. In Pirkei Avos, the very first Mishnah tells us what? Having metunim badin. That a person has to spend a lot of time in judgment. They have to really think about it. To make sure that what's done is done correctly and properly. The idea that the Torah is trying to tell us is we need to make sure that the process is fair. Even though this is a fairy tale ending, its message is that in the real world, without laws, and without guidance and without judgment, what ends up happening is instead of preserving justice, right, what ends up happening is you pervert justice. And so where Yehuda comes here is to show us how much was broken in the society that they lived in. And the truth is that could help us understand a lot as to why Perek Lamed Chet comes after Lamed Zayin. Because there's a lot of stretching and reaching to understand how it's possible that the brothers could justify what they do to Yosef. But in a world that's absent, even though there are, you know, sources that will tell you that they convened the Beis Din, and they said that he was a rodef, and therefore he was deserving of death. But Yehuda, there's a certain piece that's missing. And that's what leads Yehuda first to sell him or to have him sold, and then to this. I think what's fascinating is not so much what Yehuda does wrong, but it's kind of how they boomerang back. Yehuda does change, and when he says Tzad Kamimeni, he recognizes that he's wrong, and he begins to kind of use more of the value system that the Torah wants. And that is the idea of tzedek u'mishpat, that there should be some justice and that there should be things that are done in a proper way. But at the very least, you see in the early state, if you don't want to go that far and connect it to the other stories, what you do see is that in the early stages of the Jews, there was no sense of Torah values. And so by the giving of the Torah, what it did was it ensured that the Jewish people had a very, very strict set of code, or a strict code to keep them on the right and fair path. If not, you could end up having a story like this where Tamar is so right and is about to be killed for what others perceive her as wrong. And that could be the message that the Torah is trying to do, is stress the value of what Torah does for us.